One, two.
This is now set up on M. This is now set up on S. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10. One, two, three, four, five, six.
Testing. Testing. One, two, three. This will be an interview with Mr. Howard Green at his home in Vancouver on February the 21st, 1985. That seems to be a good level. Can we start right at the beginning with when you were born and where you were born? In Caslow?
Sure.
Okay.
Speak up so that I can hear.
All right.
Right, talk across this way.
All right, then. Perhaps you could tell me when you were born and where you were born.
Oh, I was born in Caslow, British Columbia, on the 5th of November, 1895.
And your parents?
One of my father, came west with the CPR at the time that the line was being constructed, and ended up in Caslow. My mother's people came out a little later from the Maritimes, and they settled in Caslow. And at the time that my father and mother were married, I think my father was the postmaster there, and mother was working in the office, in his office.
So that's how they met, at the post office?
Yes.
Was your mother's side of the family the one, the United Empire Loyalist? Is that the
Yes,
name?
Yes. My father's people had come from Northern Ireland.
Mm-hmm. And it was your mother's side from
the Maritimes.
From the Maritimes.
Some of them, some branches of the family were United Empire Loyalists.
How did her family come west?
Well, my father and mother were married in Caslow. They met in Caslow and were married. I think actually they were married in Spokane, where my mother's people were living at the time. And then, of course, their family were born in Caslow. Myself and then my sister and my brother.
Are you the oldest in the family then?
Yes.
You are, and then a brother and a sister followed, did they?
A sister and a brother.
Uh-huh. What about other family members in Caslow?
Oh, well, of course, there were brothers of my father, and my mother's people lived in Caslow, too, from time to time. That was in the days when there was quite a mining boom in the Kootenai country. Caslow really was a mining town.
Do you remember your father talking about his early days when he was, I think you told me he was a contractor, was he not, with the CPR? And that led him down to
Caslow? Oh, I think they did all kinds of jobs with the CPR. And they built sheds and built stations and anything that came up. There were thousands of young people came from Ontario and Quebec and the Maritimes to work on the CPR or in connection with the CPR. And my father was one of those. And eventually they got into the general merchants business. So that became their main occupation.
Is that what your father did then? Did he ran the general store then in Caslow?
Well, he had a brother. He was with a brother in a general merchants business in Caslow. And then, as I said, he was the postmaster.
I see. Tell me about your uncle. I guess he must have been quite an influence on the family. I think you told me last time that he had actually gone off in the Northwest Rebellion.
My father and my uncle Bob were the two youngest of a family of 10. And they were always very close friends, and for many years were in partnership. And my uncle was the first mayor of Castle, and then he became a provincial member for the Slocan district, which included Castle. And he was a minister in Sir Richard McBride's government, which was the first party government in BC. And then he eventually got into the Federal House, and then into the Senate. He was 26 years in the Senate till his death.
Tell me about your Uncle Bob.
Well, that's Uncle Bob I was speaking about.
Yes. What was he like?
Well, all the rest of the family worshipped him.
Good sense of humor?
Oh, he was a very fine man. That's a picture of him I have in the den.
Did he marry in that area? Did he bring up a family at all?
Oh, yes. He married for some time. When he was young, very young, he had been in the American Navy in Lake Erie. At Erie, I think at Erie, Pennsylvania. And he married a young woman from Erie. And they had three children.
What made him go into politics, do you think?
Oh, I don't know. As I said, he was the first mayor of Castle. I think he was just a natural-born leader. He took the lead in many activities.
What were the family politics at the time?
They were conservative.
Everybody?
Yeah. Well, some of Mother's people were liberals. Merritt, Nova Scotia liberals.
So you had a few debates in the House then over that.
My grandmother and I used to have some debates.
Oh.
We were equally strong in our opinions.
Tell me about a little more about your Uncle Bob in McBride's cabinet. I understand, was he?
Well, I think he was one of Sir Richard's main organizers. Mm-hmm. And he and Sir Richard were great friends. They had summer homes adjoining out at Beecher Bay outside Victoria. And they were always very good friends. And when McBride came to Castle, we always had a meal at our house. This is probably one reason that I got interested in public life.
Hearing the discussions over the dinner table then.
Oh, yes, and McBride was a very likable man and mm-hmm. had a very fine personality.
Did a lot of people, when he would come out, carry on now. Tell me about McBride and your Uncle Bob and why you think he was so popular, both.
Who, McBride?
Oh, dear.
Damn.
And?
Now, who is that?
Your Uncle Bob and his popularity.
Oh. Well, I think that my uncle was just a natural-born leader. People seemed to rally behind him, and he never had very much trouble getting elected. He wasn't a speaker, he very, very infrequently made speeches, but that didn't seem to make much difference. Mind you, I was very young and I didn't really know very much about it.
Do you remember much about Mr. McBride?
Oh, I remember him coming to the house at different times, and then I went to see him when he was Agent General in London during the war. After he resigned as Premier, he was appointed Agent General in London, and I think he died there.
Yes.
And as I say, I called on him there on at least one occasion.
Did you think of at all of politics when you were growing up in Castle? Did you think of politics at all when you were growing up in Castle?
Oh, we're very, very interested and very active. And then overseas, we quite a few of us thought that when we came back to Canada, we could run the country better than the people who were running it then.
What about your high school days?
The Leslie Frost was a pal of mine overseas. I think he had the same idea.
Oh. Well, I guess it came true then.
We had, at Osgood Hall after the war, we had quite a few chaps like that. There were, a lot of the veterans took law in Osgood Hall and later went into public life.
Do you remember much about your school days in Castlow?
Oh, quite a bit, yes. Yes, it was a typical British Columbia school. Small school. There were four rooms, one of which held the high school, three for the public school.
And you made it through all right then?
Yes, we were able to get into the second year at the University of Toronto.
Oh, how was that?
Well, I couldn't have done that if I had gone into an honor course in Toronto. But I just took the general course, and the final exam we had passed in British Columbia, provincial exam, enabled me to get into second year general course at Toronto University.
Why did you decide?
I graduated in 3 years instead of four.
I see. Why did you go to Toronto? Why not McGill, where everybody else from the West was going off?
Well, most of the young people from British Columbia went to McGill because there were branches of McGill in Vancouver and in Victoria. Of course, there was no branch in the Kootenay. And I had an aunt living in Toronto. My people thought that it would be good for me to stay with her. I had a cousin who had gone through Toronto, and my Uncle Bob's daughter and son both went to McGill. But I wanted to be a little different, so I went to Toronto.
Was it a happy time in Toronto?
Oh yes, it was very good. Very good, nothing but praise for Toronto, the university and the law school.
When you were an undergraduate, did you think in terms of a political career, or what were you hoping to do?
Oh, I was on the staff of the Varsity, that was the student paper. We formed a party of our own in connection with the Literary Society, and I ran for, I think it was called the Social Democrats. The paper, the Varsity paper, was promoting this Social Democrat Party. So several of us ran, and I guess we all got a good licking. I did anyway.
Oh, that was your first...
And my Uncle Bob merely disowned me down in Ottawa. Oh.
During those years in Toronto, was there any thought that one day Canada was going to be involved in a war?
No. Oh, well, in my last year, of course, the war had broken out. And we had they had a officers training corps, so we all belonged to that. That's where I got my qualification for commission.
Did everybody feel that they should join up while they were in university?
I think it was a very, very, very large enlistment from Toronto, but I would think about the same in proportion as from the other universities.
Where was your training camp?
Well, we used to do a lot of our drill training on the campus at the university on College Street. And then the camp, after the year had ended, we went to a summer camp at Niagara on the Lake.
Was that 1915 then?
Yes. So from there, I applied to the 54th Kootenay Battalion, which was then being formed in Nelson. I applied for a commission in that battalion.
What made you decide to apply in the 54th if you had other students from your college days and presumably they were in Ontario?
Well, the 54th was my home district. And my uncle was the member for that, for Kootenay, in the Federal House.
So you felt that you wanted to...
Oh, I wanted to be with my own people, yes.
Then you
and there were... There were very few qualified officers in the area. It wouldn't be like Vancouver, where there'd be a lot of qualified men. We got some qualified officers from Vancouver, actually.
So you went back, after your training at Niagara and the like, then you went back to Castlow, did you?
That's right.
Then what happened after that?
Well, I was accepted in the battalion. given a commission in the battalion. And then I went to Nelson, where the headquarters was.
What kind of training did you receive at Nelson at that
well,
time?
Well, we didn't get much training there, just a drill. But we went to camp in Vernon, the big army camp in Vernon, and we were there for 6 months.
What sorts of drill and training did you do in Vernon before?
Oh, well, all kinds of drilling there, field maneuvers and all that business.
Did you go directly from Vernon then overseas, or did you stop off in?
Well, we were allowed. We were given leave, of course, at different times. I would get leave, for example, to go back to Castle for a certain time. And then, but we went direct from Vernon overseas, eventually. We were 6 months in Vernon. We had men from all over the Kootenai, and Vernon and Kamloops, and some from the coast.
So you went, do you remember leaving, did you go to Ontario, or someplace in Quebec first to be, or transport over to England then?
No, we went to, we were taken to Halifax.
Halifax.
Yes, our ship left from Halifax.
Was all of the 54th, your group that was going over went?
There were two battalions, the 54th and the 58th. The 58th were from Toronto.
Do you remember the troop ship at all that took you over?
Yes, very well. The night we sailed from Halifax, I was the orderly officer. And that involved going and seeing if the men were getting their proper dinner. And there were all the fumes of the dinner and so on. And I began to get pretty weak. The major, one of our majors came along and said, here, Green, come on, we better go for a walk around the deck and get some fresh air. So he took me up to the main deck, and we walked around in the fresh air for a while. So I didn't get sick.
What was the name of the vessel that you went over on? Do you remember?
I forget. The Cunard or the... I don't remember. Should remember, but I don't.
Did you have a rough crossing, or was it a smooth crossing?
Oh, no, it was uneventful. We landed at Plymouth, and I remember seeing the Eddystone Lighthouse just outside Plymouth Harbor. Very interested in that. And for a few hours before we got in, we were escorted by two destroyers.
Were they worried about submarines at
yes.
that time? There was no sign of them, though,
no,
when you were there?
No.
Where did you go when you landed, then? Did
they take you? We went from Plymouth to Bramshott. That was an army camp up in Surrey. Near, we landed, we left a train at a little place called Liphook, I think, and then marched several miles to the camp.
Was that a lot of Canadians at Bramshott?
That was a Canadian camp.
Canadian camp.
Yep.
About how, do you know how many people were there at the time?
No. Oh, I wouldn't know. There'd be quite a few thousand.
How long
See, the first Canadian division camped at Salisbury Plain, mm-hmm. but we were at Bramshott.
How long were you at Bramshott for?
Oh, I went to France in August of 1916.
So when did you land there? I didn't ask you that when you went over from the summertime.
Pardon?
When did you leave Canada then?
Oh, in December 1915.
So during this time between the all of that time would be training then in Bramshott.
Yeah.
Where did you go from Bramshott? How did they decide what battalion was going to go over to France at the...
Well, the 54th was chosen as one of the battalions to go to France as a unit. A great many of the battalions were broken up as reinforcements, and we were, of course, then put in a brigade, the 11th Brigade of the 4th Division.
Did you have an uneventful crossing then?
all the way right across at night.
And then where did you go from there when you landed in France?
We landed at Le Havre, and then we took the train just behind the back of the British front at Ypres.
What was your...
A troop train. We were on a troop train.
What was your position then at that time?
I was a platoon commander. And you'd have about 60 men in the platoon.
I see.
I had about a third of them were from my hometown.
Really?
Yeah. That's the picture I have in the den of the platoon, of the enlisted, the men who enlisted when I did.
You came at a pretty critical time during the war with... Vimy Ridge and some of the
Vimy Ridge wasn't until 1917.
17. What
was
your...
Before that, we went into the line at St. Eloy.
Oh.
That was in the Ypres area.
Was that the first big battle for your...
It wasn't a battle. We were just holding the line there. Yes, I had the first man killed in the battalion.
Were you in the trenches at the time? If you...
We went into the trenches there.
What were the...
At St. Eloy.
What were the trenches?
There had been very heavy... There had been very heavy fighting there earlier.
Mm-hmm. And so there was quite a network of trenches?
Oh, yes.
St. Eloy.
It was a complete trench.
How did they move the brigades up and the battalions in the trench warfare? How did they work that?
Oh, they'd have to go up through the communication trenches.
How did they keep the food lines going and...
Well, they'd have people detailed to bring up the food.
Mm-hmm. Was it pretty gruesome in those trenches? Was it pretty terrible?
Oh, well, there was a quiet front. They used to do some shelling, you know, but there's no attacks during our time. Our battalion put on one raid while it was there. But there were no big attacks.
What about the equipment that you had and supplies? Did they seem to be adequate for what you had?
Oh, I think so. There was some dispute about the rifles.
Okay.
They had been making rifles in Canada called the Ross rifle. And at first we were equipped with Ross rifles. But the men used, whenever they could, the men used to pick up Lee Enfield rifles. And eventually they were armed completely with the Lee Enfields. The Ross was a good target shooting rifle, but not so good in the mud.
Did you feel the same, and your men feel the same as well?
Oh, I think that was the general belief. There's quite a lot of many complaints about the Ross rifle.
Okay. What about the people that you came into contact with during that period, some of the men that were commanding officers, the Canadians, we talked about General Curry and some of the other ones.
Well, at that time, when we got to France, General Byng was the commander of the Canadian Corps, and Curry, I guess, commanded the 1st Division. They had been promoted, you see. And
did you ever see much of the commanders where you were?
Oh, every so often we'd see them, and every once in a while we'd be inspected by them too.
When did you, after St. Eloy, and then the following year in 1917, did you have a leave at all in between?
A which?
A leave? Were you able to?
No, not at that time. No, we, in the fall of, later fall of 1916, we were sent to the Somme. Canadians took part in the fighting in the Somme, and we were down on that. That was, those were attacks. We were attacking then. Mm-hmm. And we were there until Christmas. We got to Vimy Ridge at about Christmas.
What about the men in your command? Mm-hmm. What about the men with you by that number? Did you Were a lot killed during that time?
We'd have a lot of casualties, yes. The Somme fighting was very heavy.
Mm-hmm. It was a pretty terrible one. What about machine guns?
We had machine guns.
What about gas attacks? Were you involved in...
No, not in a... Well, from time to time, we'd be shelled with gas shells.
I gather in the Somme that you were in the line 4 times. Is that right? Mm-hmm. You were in the line 4 times during the Somme?
Somme? Mm-hmm. Oh, no. Well, it depends what you call a line. No, we would be in reserve part of the time. They'd switch you on. They'd relieve change the battalions. Mm-hmm. They'd only be in the front line for a certain length of time, and then another battalion would take over.
How long a campaign did you have then, personally, in that?
At the Somme, I don't remember how many we were in. We had a policy then of the junior officers. They kept half of them out because the casualties were so heavy among the junior officers. And I was in 2 or 3 times, but I missed the attack. It came when I was one of those left out. So I wasn't in the attack, which was finally made. I was just in the line, holding the line, and of course subject to shell fire, and having people killed or wounded by the shell fire too, but not in the full-scale attack.
Did you know what was going on in the other, in sort of the, you'd be in your small area, did you have any idea what was happening in the other part of the battlefield at all?
Oh, pretty much, yes. Mm-hmm. Well, the area is nearby. Mm-hmm.
Was there a feeling of that nobody was getting very far ahead, that everything was just at a standstill?
No, I think the Somme battle, while it was, a lot of casualties. No, I think they made good progress there.
What about Vimy then? What about Vimy then, the following year?
Well, from the Somme, the corps went to Vimy, the Vimy area, took over the line on Vimy Ridge. And of course, we were part of that. We were in the line on Christmas Day, I remember, on Vimy. And the attack wasn't until April, the Vimy Ridge attack. We were doing the ordinary trips in, and then on Vimy, we'd go in the line for so long and then go back to a rest camp. And then come up to the support line, and then go to the reserve line, and then start all over again. They used to change like that to keep the men rotating, you see. And they didn't just go there and sit there, they'd change over.
Did you write letters home when you're from the front?
Hey, pardon?
Did you write letters home, and did you receive letters from
home?
Oh,
yes.
And like that?
Oh, yes.
Through the Red Cross?
Mm-hmm.
Directly through the Red Cross, or were they handed
no,
out?
No, the army handled them.
Like that.
Oh no, we were writing all the time and getting parcels too. No, I even got parcels from the Sunday school I used to go to in Toronto.
Oh. So people would be writing you and.
Oh, we were, yes. Yes, and. And when any of our men were killed, we always had to write to their people.
That would be difficult.
Yeah.
Like what happened after Vimy? Did you you mentioned last time about the I was asking about airplanes, and you said that that they were splendid. They gave you a splendid assist, some of the air cover at the time. But that was that sort of new. Towards the end there?
Well, the air fighting was new to all the armies, mm-hmm. The Germans too. And Canadians did particularly well in the Air Force. We had some very distinguished airmen. One of them still alive in Vancouver, McLaren, Don McLaren. And Collishaw was another one, top-notch man. He's dead now. They were both among the first four Canadians.
Did you know what was going on at the time on the ground? Were they helping you out directly, or were you hearing via your superior officers?
Oh, they were all working together, you know.
Mm-hmm. What about the German planes as well?
The German planes were good, too.
What happened after Vimy? I think with your own situation, were you a company commander after that period?
Well, before the attack on Vimy Ridge, which was April the 9th, I think, on March the 1st, there was a gas raid put on by the Canadians, including our battalion and the 75th Battalion from Toronto. There are four battalions. The idea was to let off the gas and then go over and pick off the identification of the Germans who'd been killed by the gas. Well, we were all very dubious about this deal. We thought it was a crazy deal. Because not too sure, the gas cylinders right in our own line, and to open them up and they looked like an awful deal to me, and to all of my men too. We discussed it in the support trenches, and we couldn't see any sense to it. And it's said that the colonel, a few days before the gas attack was to take place, the colonel called me over to his dugout, and he said, "Green, I'm sending you on a course." And by the way, he had a fruit ranch at Castle on the lake shore. And a friend of my father's, and I think had promised my father he'd look after me, you see. But anyway, they said that he had phoned up somebody, they don't know who, one of the senior men, and said, this gas attack is doomed, you can't be successful. And whoever it was he phoned and said, "Well, you've got your orders." And the colonel said, "Well, if my men are going to be murdered, I'm going with them." He wasn't supposed to. So he went up to the line and went over with the men and was killed. And got very near the German trenches. And the German officer who arranged to let them take the casualties back, he said Kimball had been a very brave man. And they brought his body back to the halfway across No Man's Land.
This is Colonel Campbell.
Colonel Campbell, K-E-M-B-A-L-L. I have his picture. And we lost... I said, "Well, sir, I'm in command of A Company. Colonel and Captain Cameron is sick. And he'd been drinking, you see. He wasn't a Canadian, he was a Scotsman, you see. We picked up somewhere on the way to the floor. And he said, "Well, he's going to go over if I have to have him carried on a stretcher." So Cameron was the only fellow who got back, I think. He got wounded, went over the walking stick, got wounded. We lost over 200 men. And the 75th from Toronto lost their colonel and their adjutant, both killed. It was just a slaughter, just a slaughter. It's the only way you could describe it. This was about 6 weeks before Vimy, you see. And then, of course, that changed everything. And we younger men were put in command of higher organizations in. But, this was a goodie like the Dieppe show.
Sent out with no hope of coming
no
back.
Hope
then.
At all, no. No hope at all. Yes, the colonel sent me away on a course, you see. He sent me down to Boulogne on a five or six weeks course. So I missed that attack, too.
Did you have any politicians coming out visiting you? Did you ever any politicians coming out visiting you when you were in France?
Yes, Sir Robert Borden was there, I remember. And different from time to time, there were different ones came out. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the others. We didn't see very much of them.
So you never heard any
speeches? We saw more of them after the war.
Yes,
I'll
bet.
They tend to look at the battlefields and so on, including Mackenzie King.
I understood that he came out.
Yeah. This is after the war.
It was after the war then. What did he come out for?
Just to see the battlefields.
So he didn't make any speeches or...
No, our little section at the British headquarters working on the mobilization, we had about 20 cars, and we supplied the car and the driver for them. And the younger officers were poking fun at him behind his back, you see. And our commander said, well, that's all right, boys, you can talk all you like, but that man's going to be Prime Minister of Canada.
Did you believe
him? He didn't know, 1919, he wasn't even a member then.
Why were you poking fun at him?
Well, he would go to the cemeteries where Canadians were buried and take his hat off and cry like a baby. And he hadn't been in the war at all or anything, you see.
When the war was finished, you, I think, mentioned to me last time that, how did you finish up? Were you a staff captain, was that it?
Pardon?
Were you a staff captain?
Oh, I wasn't made a staff captain until after the armistice.
Oh, I see, okay. Well, when did you go?
Before that, I was a learner, a staff learner, training to be a staff officer.
Tell me
and
what,
part of that time I was an acting staff officer.
Mm-hmm. What happened after you came back, you went off to the training course, then what happened after that?
Went back what?
After the training course that you were on.
Oh, I went back to battalion. I got back just the night before the Vimy Ridge attack. Then I was too late for that attack, you see. They'd all been trained and they'd gone over the tapes and everything. And of course it was hard for the battalion because they'd been so weakened by this gas attack.
Mm-hmm. Did you think the war was going to go on forever?
No, I don't think so.
By that time, did you feel that the war was coming
well,
to an end?
Vimy Ridge was a great victory. Mm. And it was downhill pretty much for the Germans ever after that. The Americans came in, you see, and when we got to Germany with the Army of Occupation, some of them used to tell us, oh, you didn't beat us, there were just too many Americans.
You must have been quite resentful on that then. How did you end up in the Army of Occupation?
Hmm?
How did you end up in the Army of Occupation?
Well, when I was appointed a staff learner, I was sent up to the 6th Brigade in the 2nd Division. See, I'd been in the 4th Division, 11th Brigade. And there I was working with the staff, working under the staff captain, who was a Vancouver man, by the way, Sharp, of Sharp and Thompson, the architects. He was the architect at the university. A very fine fellow, too. So that from then on, I was with the 2nd Division, the 6th Brigade. It was a Western Brigade, one battalion from each Western province, and a cracking good brigade, one of the best in the war. So that then everything I did, and it was the 6th Brigade attacked on the 11th of November the next year. And then we were one of the, 2nd Division was one of the divisions that went off to Germany. There were two Canadian divisions and two British, mm-hmm. formed the Army of Occupation, but we were one of the Canadians.
Where did you go in Germany?
Bonn.
To Bonn. How long were you in Bonn?
Well, I don't know how long the battalion was there. I about Christmas time, I was ordered to go down to the base headquarters to work on demobilization.
What was Bonn like?
And it was
like?
Down there that I was appointed as staff captain.
I see. What was Bonn like when you were there?
Hey, pardon?
What was Bonn like? Was there a lot of, could you tell the war had made
it wasn't
terrible?
The capital of Germany, yeah.
Was it pretty terrible, though, in the city?
No,
had they
no.
No, so they hadn't
not
noticed
much damage,
it?
No.
No.
No. No, Bonn was just an ordinary city then.
So there hadn't really been much, the
not
war
Bonn.
Hadn't
a
made a big
a little bombing
impact.
In the downtown area.
Could you tell, was there food supplies in great, mm-hmm. short supply? Food supplies?
Oh, I think they were all right for food. But they were being licked. They couldn't have won. They had no chance to win.
What was the feeling towards the Germans after all of those terrible years and those battles? Did you?
Well, the Foch had issued an order that all German males had to take their hat off to an officer. And but the Germans soon got wise to that. They'd pretend they couldn't understand your German or understand your English. And while they were partly going with you, about 10 others walked by. See? So they canceled the order. They were pretty smart, you know.
Well, after you left Bonn, you told me that you went to Boulogne.
Hmm?
Did you go to Boulogne after Bonn?
Well, the Hague's headquarters was at Etap. That's outside Boulogne. Later, it was moved to north of Boulogne, Wimereux. But when I went, when I joined the headquarters, it was at Etap.
Was that 1919?
Montreuil it was, not Etap. 1919. Oof. Oh, the Canadians had a wonderful record.
Did you make a lot of friends during that time?
Oh yes, we made many friends among the Canadian forces. I was an instructor at the Canadian Corps Infantry School for after Vimy first for about 8 months, and every month there would be one officer come down from each battalion, and I think it was two or three non-commissioned officers for a course at the Indian School, Corps School, Infantry School. They established schools of various kinds to train the men, you see, to train the men and the officers. And met an awful lot there. That's where I met Leslie Frost. He was in my company there. And the Manitoba, Robin's father was in it too. Different fellows like that who met subsequently all over Canada, you know.
It's like an old homecoming later on.
Oh, yes, we had a lot of friends among them.
When did you, when the war was finally over, how long were you in France? Were you demobilized back to England before you went home? Or
no, I stayed at the Canadian section at the general headquarters until I'd had my staff appointment for 6 months. You had to have an appointment for 6 months to qualify for gratuity on the basis of that job, you see. Mm-hmm. So I stayed until I would get the full gratuity, and then I got demobilized in Calgary.
Oh, did you come back on troop ship to Halifax again?
Yeah.
Like that.
Yes, and we had the boat was coming into the dock. There were some figures there all in white, and we said, my goodness, look at there, a lot of Halifax ladies down to see us off, see us, to welcome us. And when the ship got up to the pier, it was the Negro porters on the trains. And then as we spilled out of Halifax, some private, I guess he was, he made the motions as though we were digging. He said, now you fellows will have to work.
So you went back to Calgary then for...
Yes, that was the nearest to my home station, you see.
I see.
Nearest to Kootenay.
Uh-huh. What was it like coming back to Canada after all of those years and as a young man? And then
it was not very good. Yeah. I was away 4 years, you see, practically 4 years.
Did you go directly back to Castle then after you after you got off the train in Calgary, and then did family meet you?
Well, we were demobilized in Calgary.
Mm-hmm.
Got all our papers and everything.
out at the old Curry Barracks,
mm-hmm.
out at the old Curry Barracks, or down at the Armories in Calgary.
I don't remember where we had to go. I don't think it was the Armory. May have been. I don't really remember. We took the train down to Medicine Hat. No, not to Medicine Hat, to McLeod.
And then the crow's nest. Yeah. What was it like going back home? Funny feeling?
Oh, well, it was very nice.
When you got back home, did you have to think about what you were going to do then, or?
Oh, I decided to go into law.
What made you decide law? There wasn't anybody in your family.
Really, the idea of going into public life.
Oh, I see. Why law? Why not?
Best training for public life.
Did your Uncle Bob give you any hints on this, or did it something you had made up your
no,
mind?
No, I think he agreed. His son was a lawyer, too. His son was with me in the battalion.
Had you discussed it with
him? He was the paymaster.
Had you discussed it with him?
Oh, probably. I don't remember, but I guess so. He went into law, too.
So you went...
He went to Osgoode Hall, too.
So did you come down to Vancouver from Calslow then?
Yes.
How did you have any friends in law firms, or how did you sort of start?
Well, I had in the 6th Brigade, we'd had a very fine brigade major, the Honorable Francis Grosvenor. His picture's in the den, too. And I'd asked, he'd been in Vancouver before the war. He was with the 29th Battalion, eventually. He came out after the war to visit Vancouver, and I asked him to see what he could do about finding me an opening in the law firm. But he hadn't, the firm he recommended didn't take me on. So I had quite a bit of trouble getting a law firm to go in with. However, I first had to get leave to go to Osgoode Hall, and that was to take a year anyway. So,
what firm did you finally end up with?
Ladner's firm. He was wanting to go into public life, and he was a Rotarian, and the minister of my church was Rotarian. He'd been a friend of mine overseas, Colonel Follis.
From Memorial Church, yes.
Yeah. So he took me to see Ladner, and Ladner took me on. I was only a student then, So we became very great friends.
How did you decide, because lots of people went through law by articling and not going to law school?
Well, here you could do that by serving in an office for 5 years, I think it was. But a university graduate didn't have to do that. They could get through in 3 years.
What made you decide to go to Osgoode Hall?
Well, I had an uncle here, Dr. Goodwin, a dentist. And he had a great friend, Roy Long, who was sort of a father confessor to a lot of young lawyers. Awfully good fellow. So he said, come on, we'll go over and see Roy Long, see what he thinks about it. So we went over on Sunday afternoon to Roy Long's. Roy Long was a Baptist, like my uncle, and we were friends. And he said, Howard, you've got the gratuity. There are only two schools in Canada, two good law schools, Osgoode Hall and Dalhousie. He said, I'd advise you to get a ticket and get on the train and go to one of those schools. Don't fool around here just in an office. So I took his advice and I went to Toronto.
At Toronto, you were going to Osgoode Hall, though, this time.
Yeah, pardon?
You were at Osgoode Hall, though, this time. So did you have any friends that you had gone to school with before?
Well, Osgoode Hall was the Law Society's university, you see. Oh, no, I was just to get the course there. And when I got there, I found that for university graduates, they were allowing you to go into the second year, miss the first year. So that helped quite a bit, and that they would give you with a third year in the summer, so you could get graduate in a year. So I took that, and I used to get in all the first year lectures I could, in addition to the second year. And at Christmas time, I got into a law firm. I had a friend of mine that stayed at the YMCA where I did, suggested that I go into there into the firm. And so I was in the law firm for the last 6 or 8 months.
That's a pretty heavy load to carry.
Oh yes, it was a heavy load. Very happy year though. And so I got graduated. I got the second year in the spring. And then in the third year in the summer, I got the silver medal. I came second in it. About 125 in the class. Then I came out to BC, you see. I couldn't be called to the bar in Ontario because I was a BC student. And out here they wouldn't take me because I hadn't been qualified, hadn't been called to the bar in Ontario.
Oh, I
so,
see.
Hey, well, I was sort of betwixt and between, you see. But out here they had a system you could take exams every 3 or 4 months. Didn't have to wait once a year, you see. So I started in taking exams first year, second year, third year. They had the third year rule too, that you would need only take 3 if you were a university graduate.
You must have felt like you were doing nothing but taking exams.
Well, I was, see, 3. So I got called in about a year after I got here.
Did you go back to Ladner's firm again?
Hmm?
Did you go back to the Ladner's firm?
I guess it was after, it was then that I got into Ladner's firm, I guess. Yes, the lawyer that Grosvenor's lawyer allowed me to article to him. And yes, that's right. I didn't get into Ladner until after I graduated.
Oh, so when you came back.
Yeah. Ladner's, when he took me on, when Padraig got me fixed up, he says, "Now, Howard, what about a class of boys I got up at the Sunday school?"
So that was your little duty to pay him
that,
back?
That's my cost, you see. So I still see some of those boys.
So you started off in that law firm, yeah. And that was the start of your career then?
Yeah. Yes, they were the toughest kids in the Sunday school.